This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If you have any loved ones in Ukraine, please understand that the vast majority of us are safe. We are home or in basements or in the subway, and just keep praying for us.
It was Nigerian student Leonard Obianisi who fled the Ukrainian capital Kyiv and speaks on the situation in the city of Kharkiv. Details coming up. Also, in South Africa, locals are accusing migrants of stealing jobs. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Start with our top story. Mideast and North African governments have been cautious in their response to Russia, a major supplier of the region's wheat and weapons. At the same time, they do not want to alienate the United States, which supports Ukraine and is a historic ally of major powers in the Middle East. The Arab League issued a statement reflecting its wish not to offend anyone. It recalled the importance of respecting the principles of international law while pleading for a restraint and a diplomatic solution. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi the Arab reserved response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
As you know, Arab states have very strong economic and military relations with both Russia and Ukraine. They were under pressure from the EU and the US and even Ukraine to side with them and condemn Russia, and even suggested that they can translate this support by providing weapons to Ukraine. Politically, that was difficult, as sometimes the US and the EU link the military sale to Arab regimes to the issue of human rights. Both Russia and China do not have such linkage, and that's why those countries prefer to hide behind a general statement issued by the Arab League rather than become politically embarrassed and their interests may be threatened by Russia if they take sides openly.
What was the direction of the Egyptian government vis-a-vis the invasion while having close ties with Russia and strategic cooperation with the U.S.?
Egyptian foreign ministry issued a neutral general diplomatic statement calling for respecting international law and follow the dialogue in a state of conflict. Some Egyptian media interviewed the Russian ambassador to air his views on why this conflict erupted. Egypt called for the Arab League to meet and issue a unified statement on the Ukrainian crisis so that the responsibility or blame is shared by all members of the Arab League, not singled out against a particular Arab country. The public opinion in Egypt is divided. Some people feel that the West had been abusing its authority and power in the Middle East, and now they are tasting their own medicine, how they intervene in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, without regard of international law. And at the same time, they think that Putin has arrived because they are the one who wanted to expand NATO in his territory, rather than that Russia wanted to expand on their area.
Syria, whose regime Russia has aided in its 11 years long civil war, was the only Arab country to voice support for the actions taken by Russia. Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad said what the West is doing against Russia is similar to what it did against Syria during the terrorist war. Algeria and Sudan tilt the same way, a reflection of their military links with Russia, while Libya's Foreign Minister Naglal Mangouche called the Russian invasion a violation of international law. How did the alliances with Russia or feelings against it impact the Arab countries' responses?
You can see the responses from the media, how the media that support Russia would cover the conflict, how the media that are against Russia would cover the conflict. And if you make any content analysis, you will see the political orientation. If you look at the stance of those countries, the Syrian president Bashar is the only ruler who survived the Arab Spring. So thanks to the strong Russian military backing and intervention. So it was natural for the regime to feel obliged to back Moscow. Algeria has very strong relations with Russia economically and militarily, and also vis-a-vis Morocco, which is a big rival to Algeria. Sudan is under pressure from both the EU and the US because of the civilian component that had been ruled out. So it is naturally seeking support from Moscow to balance with such external pressures. If you look at Libya, there is a lot of political division and critique of the foreign minister, Mrs. Najla, who may be seeking to win favor in the West by such a statement in case the new government chosen by Fathi Bashara may rule her out. And so she may be looking for continuing post to show that the West, that she is a reliable and she is good to continue in the new government.
Was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shinawi. Nigerian government says it will start to evacuate its citizens from Ukraine on Wednesday. The government also says it has reached an agreement with the Polish and Romanian governments to ferry its citizens from their countries. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Jeffrey Onyama is Nigeria's Minister of Foreign Affairs. He says government will start evacuating the more than 2,000 Nigerians who fled the war in Ukraine to neighboring countries on Wednesday. Onyama disclosed the plan when he briefed members of the House of Representatives on evacuation efforts. The minister says Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has approved funds to evacuate citizens using two privately owned Nigerian airlines, Air Peace and Max Air. He says there are about 8,000 Nigerians in Ukraine, of which 5,000 are students. Onyama said Romania has been made the hub to evacuate 1,000 Nigerians who entered that country. About 200 had entered Poland, 200 arrived in Hungary, and another 200 are in Slovakia. A Nigerian student, Leonard Obianisi, who fled the Ukrainian capital Kiev to Kharkiv, speaks on the situation in the city. He sent an audio message to VOA through WhatsApp.
So I'm sure a lot of us have heard about everything that's going on between Russia and Ukraine at the moment. And seeing as I'm currently in the city of Kharkiv, there have been, I'm not sure if you heard that, but they're currently bombarding the city again. This is the second day in the row we're waking up to hearing sounds of explosions and all of that. So basically what's going on is the transportation by road has been temporarily suspended. Airports have been closed. There are attacks going on in this city, in the capital, and in other cities all around Ukraine.
For now, Leonard says the Nigerian students are hiding in safe places in Kharkiv.
If you have any loved ones in Ukraine, please understand that the vast majority of us are safe. We are home or in basements or in the subway, and just keep praying for us. A lot of us had to spend the night in the subway, but just keep praying for us.
Governments across Africa are working to evacuate their citizens from Ukraine. Thousands were students at the country's universities. Russia invaded Ukraine last week, and the assault with rockets, artillery, and tanks has forced nearly a million people to flee the country. There are reports of lines several kilometers of refugees trying to cross borders. Some of the thousands of African students trying to flee have complained they have encountered racism and that border officials, in some cases, have not let them leave. Officials in Ukraine and other countries have denied those allegations and have blamed the problems on the sheer crush of people trying to flee. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Nations have imposed severe economic sanctions on Russia and its top government officials in the wake of Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. The move has highlighted endemic state corruption in Russia. It also has some South African analysts drawing similarities between President Vladimir Putin's government and the African National Congress, the ANC administration. Here's Darren Taylor.
Putin's attack on Ukraine has effectively turned Russia into a pariah state, at least in the eyes of the traditional West. But political analyst Richard Poplack says it's unlikely that South Africa will soon be seeing Russia as the skunk of the world.
Russia is not just a distant country for South Africans. During the liberation era, the African National Congress was aligned with the Soviets, aligned with Soviet thinking. Some of the comrades were trained there. And our governing party is still, to an extent, a USSR cosplay supper club, even if they have more hyper-capitalistic tendencies these days.
He says the ANC's so-called radical economic transformation wing, in particular, seems to have a genuine Putin fetish.
Our old head of the state security agency, our version of the dreaded FSB, at one point had a red square as the icon on his private WhatsApp account. So there's some real Putin fanboys in this country, both on the far left and on the far right, once again proving...
The FSB is Russia's internal security and counterintelligence service.
I know who Putin is in a way that almost nobody knows who Putin is.
Bill Browder's firm advised the largest foreign investment fund in Russia until 2005. But when he and his lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, began asking questions about corruption, Moscow expelled him. Browder says Russian authorities, ordered by Putin, raided his offices, seized his companies, and used them to steal $230 million.
I've seen what a criminal he is from the inside as he's tried to cover up a murder, cover up a financial crime that he benefited from, and gone after me in the most vicious ways.
The Putin regime later imprisoned Magnitsky. Human rights groups say Russian agents tortured the lawyer for more than a year. Magnitsky died in jail in 2009. Browder understands the ANC's history with the USSR, but is surprised that Russia still enjoys support in South Africa.
Russia is not a sovereign country in the way we think of sovereign countries. It's a criminal organization with all the powers of a sovereign state. Any person who enters into the Russian government does so not to serve their country, but to steal as much money as possible.
Poplack says this is exactly what the ANC does, given all the state-driven corruption that's happened since the party came to power in 1994. Economists estimate that former President Jacob Zuma and his allies stole about R1 trillion of taxpayer money during his 9-year tenure. To Browder, the parallels with Putin's Russia are astounding.
About $1 trillion has been stolen from the Russian state and the Russian people over 22 years since Putin has been in power. Putin and the ministers, they can't keep the money in their name because if they did, it could be used to blackmail them. And so they have all these people around them. These people are known as the oligarchs who are allowed to hold money because they're known as being rich people who hold the money for them.
Investigators allege this is also how the ANC has operated. Senior officials have apparently used the intelligence service to launder money to the point where Poplack says there's now state-sanctioned gangsterism. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Africa's Labor Department has officially released the National Labor Migration Policy for public comment. It seeks to limit the number of foreign nationals that a company can employ. South Africa has the highest number of migrants in Africa, and locals are accusing them of stealing jobs. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The proposed bill seeks to empower the Minister of Labour to impose employment quotas for foreign nationals. These quotas will set a ceiling to the number of non-South Africans that can be employed by a company falling under a specific economic sector, including agriculture, hospitality, tourism, and construction. It also seeks to reserve certain jobs and small business sectors for South Africans. Labour Minister Tula Sinxesi briefed reporters on the bill.
All policies and interventions were developed within the ambit of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And government will ensure the protection of migrants and their families in accordance with the international standards and the guidelines.
employment of foreign nationals in South Africa has caused serious tensions, with some groupings visiting businesses to demand that locals be hired to replace them. The government says illegal immigration is one of the factors that has necessitated this policy proposal. The government estimates there are 4 million migrants in South Africa, representing 7% of the labor force. This has caused tension between foreign nationals and unemployed South Africans. Zimbabwean national Mercy Mvundla told VOA that the announcement has left them scared.
If they implement that law, then it means that most of us will be jobless, resulting to our kids not going to school. I don't think it's good for the economy of the country.
Humuzo Mukwena, a labor law lecturer and attorney, told VOA that the growing sentiment that immigrants cause a lack of jobs is false and dangerous. However, she says South Africa is not the first country to introduce laws that set aside a certain number of jobs for locals.
Other countries do significantly limit the amount of foreign nationals who work. So the set of circumstances that South Africa is dealing with is not a unique one. Will this address the unemployment problem? I do not believe it will, because I believe the unemployment problem in South Africa is complex. I don't believe it has much to do with the employment of foreign nationals.
South Africa's expanded unemployment rate, which includes active job seekers and those who have given up looking for jobs, is sitting at 46%. Public consultation on the bill has been set for 90 days. Then it will be taken to Parliament. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Libyan lawmakers confirmed a new transitional government yesterday in a move that is likely to create parallel administrations and fuel tensions in a country mired in conflict for more than a decade. Prime Minister-designate Fatih Basaga submitted his cabinet to the East-based House of Representatives, where 92 of 101 lawmakers in attendance approved it. Basaga was appointed last month after the country's transitional government failed to hold the country's first ever presidential elections late last year. Embattled Prime Minister Abdulhamid Dibiba, who, like Basaga, hails from Misrata, remained defiant yesterday against replacing his government. The divisions have raised fears of a return to fighting in the war-torn country after more than a year of relative peace. Teachers in Cameroon are refusing to work, citing unpaid salaries, some dating back years. Government-led negotiations Tuesday failed to reach an agreement, putting the education of hundreds of thousands of children on hold. Moki Edwin Kendeka reports from Yaoundé.
Students at Government Bilingual High School Deidu in the city of Douala think that the government should pay their teachers so children have access to education. In the song, the children say their dreams of becoming government ministers, doctors, journalists, and entrepreneurs will be shattered if the government fails to listen to teachers. Architect David Mulu has three children in the school. He says he visited the school on Wednesday to find out why teachers come to school but refuse to teach.
Because of COVID, children have not been regular in school. If they continue losing because their teachers are on strike, the children's future is jeopardized. So my plea is that the government should look into their problem.
Mulu said school attendance in Cameroon has not been regular since the Central African State reported its first cases of COVID-19 in March 2020. He said during the Africa Football Cup of Nations, which Cameroon hosted last month, the government interrupted classes so students could fill empty football stadiums. He said children have no time to waste if they are to prepare for this year's final examinations expected in May. 10 Cameroon teachers' associations and unions last week announced a strike against what they call the disrespect of teachers by the government. The teachers say the monthly salaries of primary school teachers should be increased from about $150 to at least $400. They are also asking the salaries of secondary school teachers to be increased from about $400 to at least $800. Valentine Tame, president of the Teachers Association of Cameroon, says his colleagues are particularly angry because the government has recruited more teachers than it can pay and now owes several years of unpaid salaries.
At a certain moment, most professions stopped recruiting, but education continued to recruit teachers. And so there are so many, and you have teachers who have gone for 9 years, 10 years without salaries. And the government has kept promising and kept promising and promising. And what is most irksome is that those who have money go and give bribes, and they have their arrears, they have their salaries.
The sides negotiated Tuesday, and the government promised to look into the teachers' grievances and pay the outstanding salaries of at least 17,000 teachers, though it did not say when. A statement from Fuda Seraphine Magloa, Secretary General of the Prime Minister's Office, said the teachers agreed to suspend the strike. Geography instructor Apollinaire Zay, a spokesman for the disgruntled teachers, says the teachers agreed to no such thing.
Nous devons respecter le mot d'ordre en allant à l'établissement suivant nos emplois de temps.
Zay says all teachers should go to school, but should not teach. He says school children should be calm and understand that teachers are going through a very difficult time. Zay says teachers should be humble and courageous to ask intimidating police and government officials if the police and government officials can also work for so many years without being paid. The government denies that its officials and the police are trying to intimidate the teachers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's Premier Men's Basketball League to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt, and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7, FMs, and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05.